chose to come and to worship with us. As was announced this morning, we're going to continue in Exodus chapter 20. If you want to take your Bibles over to Exodus chapter 20, we'll get started there in just a second. As we've been looking at the Ten Commandments today, we've tried to emphasize that not only are these laws that give us restrictions or directions about certain principles, but that God gave the Ten Commandments here to encapsulate what it meant to be a citizen of Israel, to really pull these people together and to give them an identity. And that depended on some outer transformation, going from slaves in Egypt to their own nation, but also some inner transformation, the way they would think about God and the way that they would think about His laws. So this morning we kicked off with just the first four commandments that we said mostly dealt with our relationship with God. Having no other gods before the Lord meant we were going to honor God with our life. But we didn't let the honor stop there. We said we'd also honor God from our heart, that there would be no idol, not a physical idol, and not even this greed or these other things that sometimes show up as idols in our lives. We also said we would try to honor God with our speech, that He had the right to regulate every part of our life, including the things that we say, and that because His name represents His reputation or His glory, that we would honor Him with our speech. And then fourth, that God would be honored in our time. All of those just elevated the worth that we place on God, right? That He is worth my devotion. He is worth my loyalty. He is worth my respect. He is worth setting aside time to worship Him. And so tonight we want to pick back up in chapter 20 and look at these final six commandments. What do they have in common? What are they elevating? What importance do they carry? I would say that when we look at all six of these, they show us just how very important each of these qualities or attributes in life are. Commandment number 5 teaches us that family itself is something that God values and something that we should value. Life is something that God values and that we should value. Marriage is something that God values, that we should value. It's the importance over and over again, even the importance of something like ownership, right? That someone has personal property and that belongs to them, and there's a respect associated with ownership. He gives the importance of truth in our judicial system, absolutely, because He talks about bearing false witness, but not just in justice, but in all of society, the importance of truth, and ultimately the importance of gratitude, being taught not to covet. And as you kind of look at this list for a minute, understand a few things about what these have in common. Number one, God establishes all of these, doesn't He? He establishes what is truth. His word is truth. He establishes our blessings, so everything we are grateful for circles back to Him. He establishes human life. He establishes marriage. All of these are principles that He actually creates. And although He establishes them, He also puts them at an elevated status to be treasured. So life is to be treasured, right? Marriage to be treasured. Truth to be treasured. Something that we would place great value on. And if He creates them and He places great value and He wants us to place great value on them, then we actually need to appreciate these. They appreciate the difference that gratitude makes, the difference that godly senses of ownership make. All of these are important. And so I want us to walk through the final six commandments tonight. Let's start in verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. What would we say about this fifth commandment? Well, as God gives this command, yes, He's talking about the importance of family, but we first see that both the father and the mother have delegated authority from God. If they are going to be honored, this is the first category in the list where someone besides God gets the honor. Because all four of the first ones, right, were different ways that we could honor God. But now, even within our families, our parents have that honor. And it's been well said, and it is worth repeating, that if we don't learn to honor authority figures within our family, it is very hard to honor teachers. It is very hard to honor elders. It is very hard to honor anyone else if we don't learn basic concepts of showing honor within the family first. So there's delegated authority here, and it can be hard to respect that authority sometimes. It can be hard to submit to that authority sometimes. That is the very first aspect of honor that we're given here. How else are parents honored? Well, what do you do in your home? If you need to demonstrate the respect that you have for your parents in some way, there are little things that we do, right? When mom says, chew with your mouth closed, or use a fork, or use a knife, or use a spoon, or don't put so much sugar on your cereal, how do we respond to those really simple requests? There is a sense in which we honor our parents just by having good manners, by the position that we give them at the table, by letting them go first in line at a potluck, right? By having the kind of clothing and attire that they deem appropriate and respectable. There are so many ways, just simple cultural ways, that we begin to show respect and honor for our parents. We place their words with greater weight in our lives because they are our parents. And then there's obviously issues of obedience. Ephesians chapter 6, of course, talks about obeying. Children, obey your parents. But what does Ephesians as a whole show in the sense of obedience? Isn't it that the book that tells us to do all things without grumbling and complaining? To think about the attitude that we are supposed to show in that compliance? And then Timothy, as well as Jesus himself, talks about honoring parents through financial support at that stage of life when this becomes appropriate. And the big push on this final point is that parents actually become those that not only deserve honor, but they deserve help. They deserve help when it's needed. And we are supposed to be a people that are helpful towards our family rather than hurtful in our family. This is important, and God makes it commandment number 5. What about commandment number 6? You shall not murder. Boy, there's lots of different language that could be used in that commandment. Could be that he just says, thou shalt not kill. But boy, that's a really broad commandment, thou shalt not kill. And sometimes people even paraphrase this commandment just to say, thou shalt not kill. But that's not actually the language. Walk through this for a moment. Thou shalt not murder is the actual language. What do we know about murder just in this country? So I did a little digging. U.S. Department of Justice, 2019, 16,000 homicides. In 2020, it went up even higher, 20,000 homicides. That's more than one per day in every state. 20,000 homicides in our nation just last year. It's almost a record high. Back in 2011, it was only 14,000 homicides in the U.S., but it's grown by over 30%. If you're a male in America, you're 4 times more likely to be the murderer or the victim. And maybe that doesn't surprise us because Cain killed Abel, right? The guys got into a scuffle here. But maybe this is a commandment that is especially something that needs to hit the hearts of every man. How am I controlling my anger? How am I directing my thoughts? What do I do when somebody pushes back against me? Do I have that righteousness to turn the other cheek? Or does jealousy or ego get out of control? Men should show strength under control, and yet we see it out of control in our nation. Now, there are many other passages that we could talk about with regard to someone being put to death. There are military battles, which clearly they participated in the Old Testament. There's capital punishment. If you want to look back at Genesis 9, God tells Noah at the end of the flood, right? Because you're in the image of God, if a man sheds the blood of another, then his life would be taken. It's not always just about like retribution or vengeance. It's about the value of every human life. There's even accidental deaths, right? We talk about accidental manslaughter and things like that. Those are separate issues. The Bible addresses each one. But what is this passage saying? In this commandment, you shall not murder. The reminder here is to willfully or intentionally take an innocent life. It's just wrong. To willfully and intentionally take an innocent life is wrong because life is to be cherished. God is the one that has created every one of us. He's the one that gave us the very breath of life. And the commandment sits down as a basic fundamental concept of society. You don't commit murder. I don't want to put the next point up. Because I already saw your faces. You looked at that and you said, whoa, 20,000 murders in 2020. Last 2017, 862,320 abortions. 1 year. 1 year. God tells us, do not willfully and intentionally take an innocent life. And we need to understand that not only are there those that lose their temper, but there's a loss of following and submitting to God. And when you look at the religious backgrounds of those that are willing to fill out surveys, this is not just non-believers. It's people that claim to be Christians. And we need to come back and remember the value of every life. Amen. That one's just big, guys. And we would think that there would be just universal agreement. Do not murder. And we almost use that as an example lightly when you need to say, oh, well, this is clearly wrong. But we forget. And we run to temptation. We run to the devil when he gives us a quick or an easy way out of a problem that we've created, and that's wrong. And God has, as a fundamental commandment, the importance of life to be cherished. What about the seventh commandment? You shall not steal, verse 14. You shall not commit adultery. When we come to verse 14, we're being reminded of the significance of marriage, right? That marriage has been created by God to reflect long-term faithfulness. Because He's a God of faithfulness, and He wants us to have confidence in Him and our relationship with Him. And adultery always messes that up. 65% of marriages with an adultery will end in divorce, which means 35% find a way to work it out. But 65% of marriages with adultery will end in divorce. 80% of people who leave their marriage in order to marry someone else report that they later regret it. 80% wish they had never done it. 70% of people who leave their marriage to marry someone else actually end up divorcing that person. Only 15% of people who commit adultery and marry someone else report that they are actually happy. Adultery doesn't solve things. Adultery is that temptation again whereby Satan deceives us. And adultery always dishonors. We're supposed to be honoring family and honoring life and keeping these things important. But it dishonors God. It dishonors marriage, family. It dishonors our very bodies. And we talk about Leviticus chapter 20 sometimes as condemning homosexual sin, but it condemns heterosexual sin as well. Right? It's not like we're picking on any one group. God wants us to be pure in our sexual relationships. And adultery always dishonors what He has made for us to be. I think Jesus reminds us so clearly in Matthew 5 and in Matthew 19 that God hates every form of adultery, doesn't He? If someone is just being lustful in their heart, Jesus says, no, that's wrong, that's sinful, that's adultery. God does not approve. Right? But God hates adultery of betrayal, right? Two people that are actually married and one of them is sexually unfaithful. There's that betrayal in a marriage. God hates that. But Jesus pushed it even further. Right? He talked about that put away person that would go back and would remarry. He said even that was adultery. God hates adultery even if it's dressed up and masquerading as a marriage that He has given no authority for. God just does not approve of adultery in any form. So we need to really think about how we're going to avoid that. And the Bible is full of instructions about giving that loving care and respect towards one another. Right? It's full of instructions about guarding our eyes and our heart and stopping those temptations before they get out of control. About keeping God in the focus of our life, knowing that it is His commands and His wills. And then really finding better friends. Because you should be spending time with people that would not allow you to fall into that sin, that would reject any kind of advances that might be made, that would hold us accountable and lift us up to what the seventh commandment is all about. Reflecting that long-term faithfulness of the marriages that God has established. It's such an important command. What about the eighth? You shall not steal, verse 15. You shall not steal. You see that that is predicated on a very concept of ownership. We look in Acts chapter 2 when we think about the church and that everything was shared freely. No one claimed anything as their own. That is a loving attitude. But even that attitude was not denying principles of ownership. We see later with Ananias and Sapphira, right? That while it was their own, was it not yours to do with as you willed? There was ownership. Now there's generosity. Beautiful, biblical generosity. But the only way you can even be generous is to give of what you've been blessed with. And so there's a concept of ownership here that really stealing becomes a multifaceted crime. There has to be some level of selfishness to say, I'm going to take that. There has to be some level of property rights that get broken. On some level, it's a denial of the responsibility to just work and earn and get something of your own. And it's a breakdown in the responsibility to be generous. This is really a crime and a problem that goes on and on. And what's interesting is that command 5, 6, and 7 all dealt with people, right? Honor your father and mother, don't murder, and don't commit adultery. But verse 15, he's not just dealing with people, he's dealing with things. Because how we interact with physical possessions says something about our heart. And what did we say? The whole goal of this is inner and outer transformation. That our heart is being changed as we submit ourselves to these commands. We know that there's many ways people steal, right? You can download things that aren't yours. You can steal someone's identity. You can cheat and steal answers. There's so many different ways to steal. I had to add to my list. Ransomware, of course, is stealing someone's data, right? Holding them kind of ransom. One of the popular things we've talked about in the Modern Challenges class is states that have changed their laws for misdemeanors and felonies. Actually, it's so heartbreaking. Just hiring homeless people to go into stores and steal right up underneath the limit of it being a felony so that it won't get prosecuted. And here's homeless, desperate people being taken advantage of by organized crime just to go steal right up to the level before they would call the cops. There's so many ways that stealing still shows up in our society. And each one is a rejection of what Ephesians 4:28 says. Don't steal. Go work that you would have something to give to others. The eighth commandment is such a critical commandment, again, for society to be able to function. What about our ninth? You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. We've already seen that God values justice back in verse 5. He's visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. But people lie all the time. People come in and they dishonor God and His justice. Why? Here's my list. To avoid trouble, right? Or attempt to avoid trouble. Sometimes people lie to get attention, right? They exaggerate, they brag just to get attention. To make someone else look bad. We lie for slander, trying to elevate our own reputation. We lie for personal gain, such as like kind of padding your resume and making it better than it really is. We lie for personal gain. We lie to deceive others about our true beliefs or plans, right? Think someone with a hidden agenda and that they're lying about that. We lie to try to trap others, as they did with Daniel. We lie to shift the blame from ourselves. People lie for a lot of reasons. There's a typo on here. It's actually verse 5. But come back with me to Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 5 for a moment when we think of the significance of this commandment. Chapter 19, verse 5. A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who tells lies will not escape. So many times it's easy to think of the havoc that is being created by deception and by lies, the disruption that it brings to society, and all of those things are true. But here, there's a reminder that no, you're not going to get away with it. Because God knows the heart of everyone. Without valuing truth, of course, our relationships become dysfunctional. If we don't value truth, we don't submit ourselves to God. If we don't value truth, our family, our friendships don't run right. Our society is dysfunctional. And there's a couple of ways to try to fix that. Kind of the modern concept, of course, is that everything is relative. And you can just erode away the concept of truth. But that does not bring more kindness or more respect. It brings greater distress, greater pain, and greater trouble. Now, if you were a Pharisee, what would you do with all of that? It would be pretty clear that you needed to tell the truth. But maybe if you were a Pharisee, you would look at that and say, well, I only have to tell the truth if I've like put my hand on the Torah and I've promised to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth in court. So maybe you would allow a little bit of deception in these other times. Or maybe it would be exactly what they came and asked Jesus and said, but who is my neighbor? Did you catch the end phrase there? Because the commandment is different than the preceding verses. It's not just you shall not bear false witness. He specifically identifies, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. And I can just understand how the Pharisees would say, oh, I lied against a Samaritan, but he's not my neighbor. I lied against a Gentile, but he... When we think about this commandment, we're being reminded not only of the importance of truth, but how broadly truth should be used and shared. I sure hope others around me consider me their neighbor when they think about this command. We should be seeking to be honest and upright with everyone we meet. Christians, Paul says, have to be trustworthy. In 1 Corinthians 4, he says, I'm a steward. And all stewards, anyone that's been giving something of value, they have to be trustworthy. And so I have to ask myself, how am I doing in my stewardship of honesty and truth given in God's Word? It's such a great commandment. And then finally we come to the 10th commandment in verse 17. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. The 10th commandment again talks to us about where our heart is at and deals with things and people in one commandment. Now, we might talk about greed is just wanting it all. Like, if I'm greedy, I want everything in the store. I want everything on Amazon. I just want everything. Coveting is just a little different than greed. Coveting is looking at what somebody else has and saying, like, oh, I wish I had that truck. Oh, I wish I had that wife. Oh, I wish I had that. In this case, it's ox and cattle, which I'm going to assume is motorcycle and jet ski. But, like, I just wish that I had that. It's looking around at everybody else, and boy, that's so popular today. And it seems like social media just dumps gasoline on that fire to cause us not just to want generic things, but to want somebody else's vacation, to want somebody else's like picture perfect whatever. And the 10th commandment is saying, no, you're looking in the wrong direction. Not only is it prohibiting coveting, but it is commending this attitude of gratitude. And I get it. You're saying, no, Philip, you didn't get the spectrum right. It's coveting and contentment. I don't think so. Because as tempting as it would just be to say that contentment is the opposite of the coveting, coveting is going to get more. Contentment is being happy like with what you have and at peace, but gratitude is knowing you don't deserve it in the first place. Right? Gratitude is this concept that this really has come from God. And knowing that He has blessed us with all of these things, how could the children of Israel not be more grateful? We're going to see in just a few chapters that they're complaining about the free food from heaven, right? No more manna. But we can be just like that when we fail to have gratitude over what God has provided. I think this commandment reminds us that the coveting heart is just focused in the wrong direction. I should be rejoicing with my neighbor over all the blessings in their life, happy and celebrating with them that God has been so good to them in their life, whether that's emotional things or physical things. But what scares me about this one is we would go, oh yeah, that's commandment number 10. I mean, the biggies were back there with murder and adultery, and this one's just kind of easy. It's not easy. This is the one that David violates when he's after Bathsheba. And just like when we talked about the honesty one and we said that's kind of a multifaceted commandment, if you break the commandment of coveting, you are highly likely to break many more commandments with it. You're likely to lie in order to get what you're after. You're likely to steal in order to get what you're after. You're likely to dishonor your parents and take something that doesn't really, like, there's so many other commandments that get broken because the heart commandment, the coveting commandment, gets broken first. So it is so important that we have an attitude of gratitude. What do you think about these Ten Commandments today? The first four, honoring God in every way that we possibly can, truly keeping Him first. And the final six, establishing the things that are important in our family and in our society. All of them being elevated in the New Testament. They served a specific purpose for a specific people, but they continue to serve the purpose of, for us and our generation of pointing us towards Christ. Because if you can do anything today, you can pick out which one you've broken. Right? That time you took something from another kid on the playground. That time you lusted in your heart. That time you used God's name in vain when you hit your thumb with it. You can find the one you've broken. But we can look at Jesus that never broke a single one of these commandments. And we can look at Jesus and be so grateful that He fulfilled the law and brought us grace in a new and better covenant. And if you would like to come to Jesus Christ tonight, confessing your faith, turning away from sin and being buried with Him in baptism, He stands ready to bring us into forgiveness and into His family. Just come while we stand and while we sing.